Hi, guys, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 75, covering Avatar The Last Airbender episodes 19, The Siege of the North Part 1, and 20, The Siege of the North Part 2. It's a two-part finale, guys. It's awesome. So, yes, as always, our contact information is as follows. Our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @RE_watchable. And you can also comment on this post on hyperbole.com when it goes up. And I am joined today by a couple of people. So I've got Mitch and Brittany and Mikhail. Say hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, finale time.
And what's your name?
Oh, I'm Danya. see, Karen is going to listen to this one back and she's going to be like, who knows? Good job for making her remember, because I can either only get the intro right or I can get the outro right. I can never get both of them right in the same episode. I am terrible. Right, let's get right into it with Chapter 19, The Siege of the North, Part 1. So our synopsis is going to be long because there is a lot to cover. So, the first part of the season one finale opens as Katara shows everyone who's a waterbending boss. Sokka and Princess Yue continue their on-again, off-again dating, eventually discovering that the air is full of soot from the Fire Nation's ships. The tribe readies its troops, with Sokka joining a special ops brigade meant to infiltrate the looming army with replicated Fire Navy uniforms. However, Sokka shows up Chief Anuk's prodigy Han, the man who's meant to marry Yue, by revealing the identity of the leader of the attack, General Zhao, and that the uniforms are too outdated to work. When Sokka gets in a fist fight with Han, Anuk takes Sokka aside and asks him to instead protect his daughter. Meanwhile, the Fire Navy's brigade begins their fireball attack, much to the obvious distaste of Uncle Iroh. Iroh warns Zhao that the waterbending people will use the full moon to their advantage in order to fight back, but Zhao assures Iroh that he has everything under control. Han seems to meet his quick and comedic demise when, in the middle of this conversation, Zhao effortlessly flicks the cretin into the icy fathoms below. Aang disables many Fire Navy ships, only to realize that there are too many for any one Avatar to take down. Yue takes Aang and Katara to the most spiritual place in the Northern Water Tribe so that Aang can meditate, go into the spirit world, and seek the help of the moon and water spirits to end the attack. As Katara looks over the glowing Avatar, Zuko sneaks through the icy waters to the sacred chamber. The waterbender and firebender fight for Aang's physical body. Just as it seems Katara has taken the upper hand, the sun rises, giving Zuko the power to escape her icy prison and capture the Avatar.
Yikes, there is a lot of plot details.
Yeah. So many things happened in this episode, though, and in the next episode as well. There's just so much to cover. But
isn't it amazing that out of a 20-minute show, there's this much shoved in and it doesn't feel rushed?
Yeah. I love the finale episodes of season one are still some of my favorites to go back and rewatch. I think they may actually be two of my most rewatched episodes from when I first saw the series to now. So, yeah.
Just wait till we get to the 4-part finale of this series. It's intense.
There's a lot of intense moments coming up.
Yeah.
They're
very well paced, also, these episodes. They're like, they kind of hit their beats in a very, like, they know how to escalate the tension really well.
Oh, I know. It's so good.
And it always kills me when they're in the middle of a fight and they cut away to a less important scene. And I'm just like, no, I was really getting into that. And it's such good suspense.
Yep. But yeah, let's get right into it. So our first discussion point is, should Sokka even bother going after Yue with all the trouble she's putting him through?
Excuse me? I resent the phrasing of this question.
Yeah.
Yue's not putting him through anything. He's the one who's pursuing her. And she's like, yo, I like you, but I'm engaged. And he's like, oh, Yue, oh. And she's like, again, betrothal necklace, gotta ring on it, theoretically.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry you guys didn't agree with what I always attempt to be objective with my points. I guess I wasn't that much this time around.
I kind of agree with that. I don't think... Yeah, I think she's kind of, like, very, very attracted to him. And that's obvious, but she's kind of like, I have a duty to my family and my people to kind of be with the person my family have decided I need to be with. So, yeah, again, they can't really control how they feel about each other, but I think Yue is completely in the right being like, actually, you know what? We need to stop. Because this isn't going to happen. All of this, never happening. Yeah.
And it's weird, too, because as the series progresses, Sokka refers back to her as his girlfriend, his first girlfriend. And then I see this episode, I'm just like, she really didn't want to, like, get with you at all. So she did, but she never officially was, I guess. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I don't know how to define their relationship at all.
I don't think they know how to define their relationship. I think that they're both very, like, you know, they're hormonal and they're moving on instincts. And Yue has a lot more responsibilities than Sokka. And so it's a complicated relationship, made more complicated by the fact that she's also the moon.
Yeah, that's pretty difficult.
Yeah. It's rough, buddy. It's rough.
Yeah. But then also, you can't really blame her for liking Sokka, because the guy that she is betrothed to, not exactly the nicest of guys.
No.
Yeah, it's not like they really gave us a good point of contention that we were supposed to morally fight against. Like, oh, she really is engaged, and he's a nice guy, and he just got the short end of the stick because she doesn't like him. It's more of just like, no one likes him at all. I mean, not even his enemies can give him the time of day.
I mean, obviously, like, I wish that the show could have gone into, like, oh, who is this guy, and who's his family, and why does she have to marry him, and blah, 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 but, like, you know, they're, like, 23-minute episodes. I understand that it's just, like, this guy, she's got to marry him, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice to see more of that backstory. That would have been nice, especially to see how they became betrothed and all of that. And, you know, if Han wasn't as much of a douche when he was younger, maybe. I don't know. I think he's always been the douchiest douche to ever douche, though.
It would be great to kind of see him come up again and everyone to be like, oh, I thought you were dead. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's like, no, and I'm coming back for revenge, Sokka. Or maybe like, Sokka, you're right all the time. You're my best friend now. And they can both just kind of pine over the fact that their beloved is now the moon. Oh, it's funny, though, because like, no one seems to care where he goes. They're just like, meh. Casualty of war, whatever.
I just feel like he would, even if he does show up, though, I feel like he would just be like, so the throne? Yeah. Do I still get that, or what's the deal?
Like, do the wedding ceremony still? Can you marry the moon? Is that a thing?
Oh, God, he would.
He would.
He would.
Well, so does, yes. What's his name? From the Addams Family. Is that a thing in the show? Because I only saw the Broadway show, and there was a whole song about how he wanted to marry the moon, and I was like, this is weird.
That's funny that there's another subset of the world that has that with itself. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that was a show thing, too, and I think it just takes the phrase hang the moon to a whole other... Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, moving on. So while Sokka and Yue are on their whole new world kind of date, it's totally that sort of thing.
But it's not a date because she's engaged.
Yes, but it's not a date. They're kind of not.
Wasn't Jasmine kind of sort of engaged to Jafar?
Jafar, no.
Not at that point.
Yeah. Not at that point, no. Okay. But yeah, so you get hit with a lot of feelings when he realizes that all of the soot in the snow is the Fire Nation coming, because he remembers from when the Fire Nation attacked his tribe.
Yeah, that was feely.
So many feelings.
the show really likes harp it back to that point. They're like punching you in the gut every opportunity possible.
Oh yeah, definitely. If yeah, it's kind of like the Pixar run on Tears Factory. It definitely is, but it's nice to keep that continuity as well. That, you know, he is gonna remember things like that. He's never gonna forget the day the Fire Nation attacked, because everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked.
Oh, yes, dear. It did. Yes, it did.
You can't get away from that one line every single time.
If only Ariana was on, because I'm sure she would have... Oh, yeah, this whole episode would have been titled Everything Changed with the Fire Nation Attacked if she was writing the recap. She loves that line. She pulls it out wherever she can.
Well, it's a powerful image, too, right? Like, the snow becoming soot and, like, falling and, you know, even a little thing like Momo, you know, like, gonna eat the snow, but then it's bad because right. It's soot. It's... Like, I think they do a really good job of expanding and kind of using that to set the mood, you know, of making things, like, wrong.
Mm.
It's almost like, I don't know, maybe, like, you're seeing, like, blood in the water from the fight upstream or something, right? It's really kind of ominous, and it's kind of sad, too, because seeing even Momo trying to pick up and eat that snow just maybe... really sad, because he's trying to be so cute and playful about it, and then it's just like, oh god, this is for real, and it's oh.
Do you think that's Momo's oh shit moment?
Well, judging by how much and how opulent of the items that he brought back to Katara and Sokka when they were sick, I think he has a lot more intelligence than we give him credit for, because Momo really, like, where did he go to get all that stuff? He just... But he didn't understand water. It's weird. I don't understand Momo's intelligence. It's kind of like 0 to 60 all the time.
I think it's whenever he's faced with food, his mind just like switches off, and it's like he's in a complete haze. Like, he's not that smart anymore. So if there's something falling from the sky that he can eat, he's just zoned in.
Much like Sokka with meat. yeah, you're right, though, because, I mean, Momo was probably just like, oh, what's this flavor of snowflake?
It's very true, though. Yeah, so obviously cutting over to the Fire Nation army, Iroh compared to... Well, we know Iroh is a much different person to most of the people from the Fire Nation that we've been confronted with, but he is able to look past the Fire Nation's desires and kind of sees what the spirit world is and the importance of that, and kind of tries to... We know that maybe a little bit of it is to try and give Zuko that attempt to be able to escape the ships and go and try and capture the Avatar for himself, but also he's really, really protective of both the spirits and maintaining balance in the world despite what the Fire Nation's kind of conquering attitude is. So did you start respecting Iroh more, even more, for standing up against Zhao, or how did you feel about that whole scene and the kind of way that they played Iroh and Zhao off each other?
Well, I know how I feel about Iroh from how far into the series I've seen, obviously. So I feel that this is a big question for Brittany, that are you starting to see why we all seem to hold such a reverence for Iroh by this point?
Well, I kind of got that from the first time Iroh appeared. He's just a great... I think he's a great character. And I don't think my opinion of him, like, grew or changed at all. It just seemed natural. Like, it fits so perfectly with him that... I was just like, all right, good job, Iroh.
Yeah, I feel like Iroh, the reason I love him is because he has perspective, and like very few other characters, even Aang and Sokka and Katara, like, I mean, they have a lot more perspective, but they're still kids, and he has like a wider view than any of them, and as to what's really important, what's going on, and that like lands him on their side a bunch of times, like almost through nothing else. Obviously, we know I was a good guy, but almost through nothing else but that perspective. And I just love that, like, I find that really appealing in his character, and I love that it kind of comes out here. And it's like, you know, regardless of what happens to the Water Tribe, it's like, Zhao, like, that's a really bad idea for the entire world. Like, no.
I mean, wouldn't you think you would understand just from the fact that it is this giant glowing ball in the sky with, like, what limited universal knowledge they have, that that thing might do something important, that might be needed for everything?
Zhao is a little bit crazy cakes, though.
Yeah, a little. Yeah. He's definitely been sipping from the Kool-Aid a little bit too long. Well, you know, I have another question about Ira's wisdom. Kind of steering clear of the conversation that we're going to have about, you know, Iroh's son and all that. But when Iroh gives Zuko the line, I think you need to make sure that you're making your net very tight because an octopus will squeeze out of the tiniest holes. I didn't realize until I looked back right now that he was referencing the fact that he knew Zuko was going to, like, not be able to still hold on to the Avatar because Aang was still going to find a way to, like, you know, airbend his feet away or something. And that was, like, to me, kind of like him teaching him a lesson, you know, like, I know you're not going to win this time. I'm going to just let you go and think you're going to capture him because you need to learn your own. But really, I know you're going to fail. Like, this is not going to happen this time.
I don't know. I think he was trying to give him, you know, as much of a chance as he could. I don't think, I mean, Iroh obviously doesn't actually care if Zuko gets Aang or not. He, like, it's not important to him. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good metaphor, and apparently octopuses are, like, crazy like that. Like, they can squeeze out of anything.
Have you seen an octopus open the jar from the inside and get out? Because I have.
No, but I think I've, like, heard people talking about that. And by heard, I mean insane. People saying, like, Tumblr posts of, like, oh, man, I saw this thing with this crazy octopus.
Everyone knows what they're going to be doing when we're done here.
Not me. Not like squids.
I wish I knew the difference between a squid and an octopus. And it's weird that they have beaks like a bird. I don't understand that. But back to Aang.
Yeah, Aang, who went around all of the ships, at least the one ship, taking them out, and just kind of using their own catapults against them, which was really, really cool. I love that sequence of him kind of using what the Fire Nation has against them, because it reminded me a lot of when he goes up against Zhao the first time, and he uses Zhao's anger and inability to control his firebending against him to burn all the ships down. Like, I thought it was a really, really nice parallel to that, in that not only has Zhao not learned from that encounter, but it seems to be a wider problem in the Fire Nation army, or Fire Nation navy, even, as that's who we've got here, that they don't seem to be able to anticipate that sort of thing.
It's kind of funny, too, that they wouldn't catch on to the fact that their catapults can be, you know, like, aimed right down. So probably stop using them right now, because Aang's going to, like, learn a way to destroy your ships, guys. Come on. Like, don't load them up in the very least, right?
I just thought that was a really cool shot, you know, where Aang is, like, going to all this effort for this one ship, and then it's like, no.
Yeah.
And it's funny to me, too, because it looks like he only takes down one ship, but then he goes back and references that he took down a couple, and that still wasn't enough. So I suppose that there were some off-screen ship-taking-down moments that we just didn't see, and we kind of caught him in the middle of the action.
I would imagine that they didn't want to reuse too many of those sequences. I mean, if they just showed the same thing over and over and over again in terms of Aang just taking out, like, a multitude of the ships, then we wouldn't have the time for, like, spending, like, that little bit more time with the spirit world stuff or setting that up, and potentially less time for the showdown between Katara and Zuko at the end, which was a beautiful sequence. So I understand why they referenced it in the way that they did, So I'm actually kind of happy that they did that, because it meant they could spend more time on other scenes that potentially needed it, rather than just reusing the same thing.
Yes. And I also felt so bad for Aang when he's sitting down and he just crouches down. And he's like, I'm just one kid. I can't do it. And then Yue's like, but you have to. So can you just not pout anymore? Like, I felt so bad. I was like, oh, this kid, he needs some help.
Is Aang our pig for slaughter?
Not now. Not now. Not ever.
Yeah.
But I did feel bad, because you do, in, like, those moments, you after, even though he's being, like, a completely, like, awesome fighter, and he's being really, like, intuitive, and, like, finding all these ways to take down the ships, at the end of the day, he's just this little 12-year-old, and he's going up against a nation by himself. And I just, yeah. I like those moments where, like, you're reminded of that.
And finally, too, because, Brittany, you remember the last episode that we were both on? We were referencing the fact that everyone just kind of lets these kids do whatever they want. Like, okay, go infiltrate the Fire Nation Navy. Have fun. And then they're adults, like, you know, perishing in this fight. But they're just like, the kids can do it, too. Why not? Doesn't matter if you're 10. It's okay. Go right ahead. It really seems twisted. I don't know if that's... Well, you know what? It makes sense, though, because it's an effect of the warrant. The last airbender is the last hope, and regardless of age, I think that people always just seem to put a really strong importance on you being the Avatar, even when you don't really know what that means. So Aang's just trying the best he can with all this stuff, and half the battle is having the confidence, I suppose, because if I was just a plain airbender, I can't say I'd really go against all those ships. He didn't do anything special when he was doing that, you know? He just kind of did it because he just felt like it. He didn't use any special avatar powers like water or anything. He just used air, you know? So it's just, I couldn't do that much as an avatar. I don't know that I would be a good avatar whatsoever.
Well, what I think is... Like... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go. I was just going to make a really stupid comment.
Well, I just think that there's this, like... I mean, something I like about these episodes is that... you know, they highlight the spiritual aspect of the world very strongly. And, you know, obviously it's pretty strong the whole time. But, like, the reason why everybody is mostly okay with Aang, you know, being given all this responsibility is because he's the Avatar. And there's, like, this, like, no-go zone of spiritual things in, you know, in this world. And then that really, you know, and then Zhao kind of comes in and is like, no, you know, he violates that. And it's kind of, it's interesting to see that whole dynamic, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the comment I was going to make was actually about Mitch as an avatar. I was going to say, Mitch, you would probably just be like, but they just added all this new stuff to Netflix.
Yeah, listen, can I use my miles to get to the North Pole to learn how to waterbend?
For real. And they better be able to let me play my Netflix to watch Gilmore Girls on the airplane with my free miles to the North Pole.
Is there Wi-Fi on this flying bison?
that'd be more of my style of travel. Yeah, like just be tapping hanging out in the freezing cold altitudes that they're in all the time. Oh, ew. Aang needs to wear a winter coat going around. He's just, I don't know, maybe it's that whole myth that monks can keep themselves warm and air nomads can do the same by controlling the air around them, but I don't know if I would even go through much effort. I would just be like, it's okay, guys. That's what a parka's for. It's just...
Oh, no. Terrible. Yeah, so we also get another really, really nice moment between Iroh and Zuko in this episode, and I just love their relationship so much. But we learn that Iroh's son had died prior to the season starting, and it just kind of puts from this episode on puts this whole new spin on their relationship and how Iroh sees Zuko as a son. And yeah, how many feelings did you have?
So many feelings.
Super feelings.
So many. The
I didn't quite tear bend yet in this episode, but I definitely did in the end, because this is emotional stuff. Every episode of this TV show, I know I've had to say this before, but it literally always makes me tear up and cry like a little baby, and I can't help it.
Yeah, no, agreed. Ugh, but the just
it's so
the
intense.
The little bit where he's telling it all, like seeing him off, and he's like, "Keep your ears warm. Don't forget to put up your hood." And you're like, "Oh no, don't be like that."
No, I like when Zuko bows and Iroh just like runs up and hugs him.
Mm. And Zuko like doesn't want to be emotional about it. He's like, "Just don't even say it. Don't." And Iroh's just like, "Screw it," you know. And he's just like, "I don't mind. I need to show the love and affection for the people I have in my life, especially for someone taking over for my son. Because I mean, I lost my son already, and I need to protect the new one that I have, my adopted one."
Well, we learned something interesting in this episode about Iroh, that he, at some point, traveled to the spirit world.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll stop there. I was about to do something bad for Brittany and the rest of the newbies.
Yeah. No, rolled up newspaper, smack you on the nose. Bad Mitch.
Well, I guess I could say this. Let's theorize from what we know right now, Brittany, what you think he was doing in the spirit world.
Trying to get his son back.
And I'm going to give you a no comment.
Thanks, Mitch. Although one of your no comments, I think, is coming back.
Well, one of my no comments is very much coming back. Let's save that big thing for when it happens, because I definitely exuded myself in the show notes at that part.
All right.
Yeah, so, Mikhail, is there anything else that you wanted to mention about that isn't going to be spoilery? Because I'm really finding it difficult to not mention anything else.
Not really about the future, but if you guys remember in the Winter Solstice episode, where Iroh is captured by the Earth Nation, I think that's the episode, and he's like, and Aang is, you know, flying around on the dragon, going to, you know, Roku or whatever, and Iroh sees Aang on the dragon in the spirit world, and nobody else can see it. And I always thought that was a really interesting moment that I'm pretty sure ties back to this.
Oh yeah, he. I feel like there must have been a moment where he kind of just met a spirit that gave him the ability to connect to spirits more, because they saw his kindred soul. I wanted to say spirit again, and they thought that he would be a good quasi avatar, a good bridge between the spirit and the natural worlds, because it's almost like, you know, they were without an avatar for so long, they needed someone else that was able to do spirity stuff, or else everything was going to go and fall into chaos if there was no balance. So, I mean, to a certain extent, I always looked at Iroh as being, like I said, like a quasi-avatar for the time that Aang was gone, regardless of the fact that he was a part of the Fire Nation. It seems like he's been trying to sabotage them for a while, a la Ba Sing Se, which is referenced in this episode as being a great failure. I don't think that that's a failure whatsoever on Iroh's part. I think that that was his greatest success, that he was able to hide that he was trying to protect the world's balance by not taking down such a large nation.
Well, we can debate about whether that's actually what he was doing, but I think that's next season.
Yeah, I think that definitely will come in more next season. Yeah.
I was just so damn dynamic.
That was a big reveal. That was a big reveal for me, though, that I didn't like that he was connected to Ba Sing Se. So that was a nice little thing.
Yeah. He has a very interesting like history, and the way they reveal it is really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm already forgetting, I think, what you guys are talking about, because I'm still too busy thinking about another certain part of his history, which you guys know just by, I think, the context of this episode. but past that, no comment, because I won't even try and guess, because you never know when you're right.
So we get into the final little bit of the episode where, obviously, Aang has gone into like his avatar kind of state and crossed over to the spirit world, and then Zuko kind of appears in his kind of like surprise. Bet you thought you'd seen the last of me. And then
was that a shout out to American Horror Story?
I mean, it could have been, but completely unintentionally.
Yeah. Yeah, so Katara versus Zuko. Yeah. Very, very different kind of fight this time between them, because they're, even with obviously it being kind of more on Katara's side at the start, you know, they're much more evenly matched this time around, and it's a very, very beautiful fight, like, I think, anyway. But how did you guys react to this fight, both as, like, a newbie and obviously having seen it before?
I was really impressed with Katara's skills, because you see that little bit at the beginning of this episode where no one really in the class, I guess you could call it, wants to face her. And then you see her actually going up against another element, and it was really cool to see her manipulate, like, not only wash out the fire, but then manipulate the ice to contain him for little periods of time. And I love when he was just like, ah, looks like, oh, wait, is that someone's line? I don't want to take it. No one says that. Okay. I didn't want to take someone's favorite line, but he's like, oh, it looks like you found yourself a master. And I just really liked that.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the first time that Katara's, like, emotional, like the strength of her convictions is matched by her skill. And, you know, she is obviously taking her role as Aang's protector really seriously, but this is the first time that she's been able to back that up with, like, seriously formidable fighting abilities. And so it's really interesting to see that kind of come together and, you know, this not really be a struggle for her, but rather like an extension of really what she's feeling.
In her one moment that she does the Voldemort Dumbledore water ball is so cool. That whenever that happens in the series, which seems to happen a lot more often than you would believe it to happen, but whenever those moments happen, I just can't get enough, because I'm thinking of even the movie, and is it a spoiler to speak of what happens in the end of the movie, because it's a bit different than what happens here? It's not like,
why are we talking about the movie?
Because the movie is so bad.
Because I have an important note about what happens to a certain character with waterbending ball, if you catch my drift.
Not a clue. I haven't seen it.
Zhao actually perishes via waterbending ball in the movie. And I can't remember. I think it's just like a couple waterbending assassins that do it to him. And it was so epic. And I love that. You're right, Donya. It's beautiful. And the way Katara's bending to, like, get it going and stuff is just so awesome.
Yeah. I mean, epic for, like, this. Epic does not go anywhere near that Avatar movie. That is not a word that we ever use in conjunction with that travesty.
I thought general consensus was that the plot is horrible. Acting and casting, etc., are all really bad. Zuko had the best anything out of everything, and the CGI was great. So that's why I was basing it all off of that.
I don't know. All I'm going to say is earthbending, and we're going to leave it at that. Because
I wish we could find a way to just do, like, a whole, like, bashing the movie episode. I think we'd have a lot of fun doing that and just comparing it to the source material as intensely as we could.
Floating rocks, we're moving on, because I will just rage about the movie for so long. It ruined it. It basically covers the span of this first season. So if you go and watch it, it's not going to really spoil anything for you if you're a newbie. But I also recommend that you just don't bother, because it's just so, so bad. But yes, so we also learn here that obviously the Fire Nation gains its power from the sun, but the Water Tribe gains power from the moon, which makes a lot of sense and kind of turns the tides back and forth. Aha, tides. Yeah, it turns the tide of the fight back and forth depending on, you know, if the moon is higher in the sky or the sun. So that was a really, really interesting kind of thing across both episodes, actually, kind of giving power back to the Fire Nation and then taking it away from the Water Tribe. I really, really liked that going through as well.
And I had a question about the moon business with it coming up conveniently during the night, because it doesn't always do that. And I was wondering if maybe in the Avatar verse it always does come up during the night, because I can't. Well, I can't think of like a specific moment where I saw like the moon in the daytime. I don't know.
I'm sorry. That just whatever.
Sounded really bad.
Yeah.
Nicole found that very funny. I'm not sure why. That's okay.
It's because at least some of us, our minds live in the gutter. So
I don't know. And comes up during the day. I don't get.
Let's talk about something else.
I missed it.
Okay, so she's not slicing off his head for reasons. Why did we? What?
I don't get that one either.
Well, I was referencing the fact that she looked like she was being a little bit more lethal to Master Paku than she was to Zuko, and like I was thinking specifically of those ice slices that she was, you know, tossing towards Paku. But then to Zuko, she just kind of disables him all the time, like shoots him up in a big jet of water and is like, okay, he's knocked out. And I was trying to feel a little bit more of the ship of Zutara that is embedded somewhere deep inside of this plot for fun, but I suppose no one else saw that part.
Well, of course, well, I saw that part.
I mean, you don't even need that kind of parallel to kind of even draw anything from it. It was just the tension through the whole fight that was enough for me. So
and Zuko's quips, his little things that he like, yeah, he references her, it's really cool. It's like, so you gained 5 power levels, well, you haven't even seen my final form, raw sun power.
Right, let's move on to favorite scenes, because we've still got another whole episode to get through. Mitch, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Momo's reaction when he tasted that ash in the sky. That was just super cute, even though it was super sad.
Yeah. Michal?
My favorite scene was Iroh and Zuko's farewell, because that was, that like we went through, gave me all the feels.
Yeah. Mine was Katara and Zuko's fight, for obvious reasons. We kind of gone over it a bit as well. Brittany?
Mine was when Yue was explaining to Katara how the moon works and all the spirits, and Aang interrupts and he's like, I know, then I can go into the spirit world and like get them to like unleash some like awesome spirit attacks. And he's like, or, you know, just like get some advice or something.
Wisdom is good too. Yeah.
Yeah. Knowledge is power, Aang.
Yeah. Power is power as well.
Well, you know, actually, in the interest of time, we don't have to discuss this. I wanted to bring up a parallel that's always kind of come up to me between this series and Potter, where knowledge and power are very different things, but they can often meld together to make you a very powerful person. And, you know, like the more Katara knows, the more power she has. But is that power already embedded her, or is the knowledge giving it to her? I don't know. But like I said, that's neither here nor there, kind of just something that popped up in my brain.
Yeah. Let's move on to favorite lines. So, Mitch?
Yeah, mine was when Zuko first arrives in the scene. As you could probably hear in the smile of my voice, it was kind of swoon-worthy when he's like, well, aren't you a big girl now? And I was like, oh!
And he's like off camera. It was great.
Oh, yeah. That was great. That really, that had a lot of tension in there.
Michal?
Mine is a line that has stayed with me since I first saw it. I knew it was going to be this line. The whole when we started rewatchable, I was like, that's going to be my favorite line for this episode, which is Zuko, you rise with the moon, I rise with the sun. And I'm like, at that, if I hadn't shipped it before, I was like, ship it so hard.
Yeah, mine was the Iroh's line where he's like, be careful what you wish for, General. History is not always kind to its subjects, which
yes,
so true, mm-hmm, about like everything, even in real life. That is just such an on-point line, like completely. Oh, yeah. Like, I love that so much.
And you know, that reminds me of a line from a Lord song. I'm seeing her in concert tonight, so I'm like super in her mode. And one of her lines is, if only bad people live to see their likeness made in stone, what does that make me? I love it. It's so accurate to this Iroh line, too.
Yes. So good. Such a good line. Mm. Brittany?
And on a less serious note, of course. I chose when Sokka is, like, pointing out all the flaws in the uniforms, and he's like, what are these from, like, 100 years ago? And the chief's like, 85.
It's almost a equivalent to that cough joke that happens.
Exactly.
That was a great scene. It was really funny, yeah. Really intense. Like, Han getting Zhao's name wrong constantly. Yeah. Really funny.
Getting everything wrong. Oh, he's so terrible.
He calls him Cho. Cho. Cho Chang.
Bitch. right.
The evil Fire Lord Cho Chang will reign upon all of the Northern Water Tribe.
Right. Moving on to part two of the finale, which is chapter 20, The Siege of the North, part two. Another super long synopsis here, so I'll try and get through this as quick as I possibly can. So, in the finale of the first season, Aang enters the spirit world, giving us a first look at an entirely new and vibrant universe of Atla. When shooed away by a meditating monkey spirit, Aang is guided by Avatar Roku's spirit to Ko, the Face Stealer. Roku warns Aang that while Ko is the only spirit old enough to know about the ocean and moon spirits, the Face Stealer lives up to his subtitle when one talking to him shows any emotion. Aang forces a poker face in a creepy showdown with Ko, the latter of which reveals that the moon and ocean spirits chose to become permanently part of the physical world and are represented by the yin and yang fish in the sacred location Aang's physical body is meditating in. Aang escapes with his face and is led back to his body by Hebei, the now friendly panda spirit. In the physical world, Zuko attempts to travel with an unconscious Avatar on his back in a harsh and blizzarding tundra. As Katara, Sokka, and Yue fly on Appa searching for the Avatar's body, the group spots Aang's spirit rushing back to his unconscious self. The gang gives the Fire Nation prince the slip, with Katara ready to leave a knocked-out Zuko for dead. Aang kindly takes Zuko onto Appa. Zhao's evil plan of killing the moon spirit fish is met with opposition by all parties, including Iroh and the gang. Aang tries to explain that the world will fall out of balance if Zhao takes out the moon, while Iroh shouts that he'll make Zhao pay tenfold for what he's about to do. The red-tinted world turns a dull gray as Zhao blasts the moon fish, garnering a vicious attack from the now treacherous Iroh. Aang goes into a special Avatar state with the help of the Ocean Spirit, where the Avatar acts as a giant water titan. Hellbent on drowning all of the Fire Nation guppies, Titan Aang takes down the fleet with ease. In one final epic showdown, Zhao reveals that he knows Zuko was the Blue Spirit. As the two fight, the last bit of the Ocean Titan grabs Zhao, who refuses Zuko's help. Zhao drowns, ending the miserable man's tyranny. Feels time. Yue was born sleeping and was given extra life power by the moon spirit. Iroh informs her that she can save the world by giving back whatever part of the moon's life she has in her to the now dead fish. Yue dies, but her spirit promises to be with Sokka forever. But wait, there's more. In a darkened, fiery chamber, Fire Lord Ozai talks to Zuko's sister, giving her a secret special mission.
Dun, 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 dun.
Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. The first time I, like, watched that, I was like, oh my god! Yeah, the end of this episode was basically me, like, going up to the TV, shaking it, going, but no, when is season two out?
It reminds me a lot of the recent season 4 trailer for Korra that we just had. Oh
my god.
I'm right?
Because spoilers. So many spoilers. But yes. Oh my god. Right.
Basically.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That. So, Brittany's like, yeah. You guys are crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I always think that, but you know, at this point.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yes. Both of these things are very exciting that we're referencing. Ah.
Yeah. Right. Getting into the episode, Ko the Face Stealer. Super creepy or super creepy? Oh my god.
So terrifying.
Baddest badass who has ever badassed.
And those red lips, though, it's just like the way he talks in Aang's ear and then changes into a baboon. It's like,
faces. Oh.
I know. I think it's even weirder, too, when he's talking about the past avatar that he's taken the face of. And I'm wondering, I don't think you're killed when you're, stolen of the face of, if that makes sense. But you still have to live your life as a faceless person, so you can't see, I suppose. And apparently you can still talk, because that monkey definitely made a noise, didn't it? The one without the face outside of Ko's little dungeon.
Yeah.
It did, actually. Yeah. Oh, that's no, odd. That's even creepier now.
Mm-hmm. Because you're talking somehow. Maybe it's just in the spirit world you can. I don't know. Yeah, so, and that's kind of fun, too, that we saw, like, that in-depth of another avatar. We saw, like, his whole facial feature really up close, not just in, like, a long descent of these are the past avatars kind of deal.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good, like, to not get, like, a stone statue kind of thing. Look at one of the previous lives that Aang had. Yeah, I love that as well.
Totally, totally. Yeah. I want to know more about that avatar. I want that to be a comic, to see, like, his fight against Ko and all that.
Yes, that would be really cool, actually. If they ever want to revisit it by looking at something like that. Because I think they don't have any more comics coming out, do they? For Avatar The Last Airbender? Like, or have they moved on to Korra tie-ins now?
No, they're still doing Avatar ones.
Oh, are they?
Oh, yes.
Well, if anyone from the team is listening to this, they're not going to be listening to it. But that is your next thing. We would love to see that as a story. That would be so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the tie-in comics so much.
Oh, they're fabulous. They're sometimes even better than episodes of the TV show.
Well, we actually found out what happened to that avatar in, like, it was like a weird game thing. Did any of you guys find out about that?
Oh, was it like when there was a female air nomad avatar talking to Aang as a spirit and she probably revealed this?
Yeah.
Like a 3D cel-shaded kind of game on Nick.com or something weird
you
like that.
You can find the videos online, but don't watch them yet because there's some spoilers in them. But, yeah, I think it was called, like, Escape from the Spirit World or something. And they're, like, motion comics. And it's not super in-depth, but it's interesting. I think technically they are canon, so.
I'm just making a note of that.
And you know what's a good thing to do for anyone who's just watching the show for the first time? Try and get your hands on the text commentary of these episodes that aired on Nickelodeon at one point. They're out there. You have to do some creative looking to find them, but they reveal more of the story than you would ever would have known to know, because they couldn't write these things in, or they were censored for the such and such a reason because of time or because of content. It's really, really fun to see what the creators wanted you to see but couldn't. I love that stuff.
So, moving on from Ko and into Zhao killing the moon spirit. Obviously, that has massive ramifications for the rest of the episode, where obviously Iroh, like, kind of completely outs himself as, like, being against Zhao and basically his plan for everything, and also changes the entire feel of the episode in terms of its color. So how did you feel about Zhao going majorly crazy cakes and all, I'm Zhao, I will go down in history for this moment, kind of thing?
Sounds like a really, really bad villain name. He's like, oh, I had months to think of this and I'm just drawn a blank.
Yeah.
Well, Brittany, did you think he was actually going to do it?
For a split second, I definitely did, because he is insane. Like, you saw when we saw him fighting Aang the first time, like, he just has no control. He just wants what he wants, and he will do it no matter what the cost. So for a split second, I'm like, this guy is actually going to do this. That is unbelievable. So yeah, I mean, his character didn't lead me to think anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool, though, that you finally got a villain that actually follows through on a threat.
For the most part, villains are just like, oh, I'm going to do such and such a thing, and then they never do. They just decide to monologue for an eternity and never actually do anything. But then Joe actually just goes and does it, and it's awesome. Well, not awesome, but good follow-through for a villain.
Reminds me of Peter and Team Wolf. I'm going to kill Scott McCall with my big fangs in my teeth. I'm going to have a nice old speech about how I've been biding my time and power. When Zhao's just like, eh, screw it.
Yeah. Yeah. Be a villain by doing and not by saying what you're going to do. Seriously.
How to be a villain. I can touch you. It's like, yeah, Avada Kedavra, done. Oh, jeez. That scene torques me for that exact reason, Danya, that Voldemort doesn't just, like, take the final blow and just be done. He just has to have, like, a whole charade and a theatricality about it.
It's monologuing.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate a good villain monologue, but when they actually get through with it, it's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, obviously, the other thing that we get is that Aang kind of levels up. He almost evolves and becomes Titan Aang, and kind of transforms into this big kind of thing and kind of takes out the entire kind of Fire Nation army, navy kind of thing, and kind of kicks some serious ass.
I mean, one might say he went Super Saiyan if we had to.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid the obvious Dragon Ball Z reference, but...
Yeah. I think it worse as the series goes on, especially a certain character, a certain villain in Korra is very Dragon Ball Z-like. That McCall and Donnie know what I'm talking of, I'm sure, and our super fans probably know of, too, listening, because sometimes a show, like, unabashedly just seems to, like, not try and avoid that stuff. They just go for it.
Yeah.
Like the clashing in the sky kind of deal. Like that stuff gets me. I'm just like, it's a bit cheesy. They're just human beings. They probably would have cracked their skulls by now.
Yeah. Brittany, what did you think of Titan Aang?
I thought it was really cool. I mean, we've seen Aang, like, have all these transformations when he's using his powers, but on such a smaller scale, and it was really nice to see, not nice, I guess, but cool to see him show how much power he actually has, and if he can master everything, he's really a force to be reckoned with.
Do you think that this was just kind of an easy way out for the end of the season, just to let the good guys win? Or do you think it was a really good progression of his powers to where we started in season one to now?
I think the latter, because don't want to spend too much more time dealing with, oh, I can, like, make this air ball and now I can make a water ball, but I still don't know what I'm doing. It's nice. Like, I was happy to see him grow so much with his powers, because I don't want that to be the central focus. I love all the underlying stories that we got in the finale. So just to have him, like, obliterate them in one go was much more satisfying to me, in order to balance it out with all of the other stories we got with Iroh and with Zuko and all of that. So I was just happy. I was happy that it was just a one off moment.
And do you think it'll truly stay a one-off moment, or do you think that at some point in the future we might see other forms like this, but for the different elements?
Oh, I hope to see more, because I really like earthbending, and I'd like to see Aang do some, like, really kick-ass earthbending. Not just what he did this time, but use it. You bring out Titan Aang in every element.
Well, you know what this starts to remind me of? A show like Ben 10, where it's like you can transform into all the elements, like all the creatures of that element. And this starts to feel really cheesy to me, because I start thinking of, like, little, like, plastic figurine toy tie-ins, where it's like, Aang destroys the Fire Nation. Hi-ya, take that! It's just, I don't really care for this Titan and what it represents. I once again, not being very subjective, I did think it was an easy cop out to let the good guys win, to just let Aang transform. The story's there. I just don't like it.
See, I'm on the side of the fence where I actually really like this whole, like, kind of Titan Aang thing. I really enjoyed it because I don't think it... I think they made it very, very clear that it's not necessarily that he's in control of that all of the time. It's not something he's going to be able to use 100% of the time. It's kind of circumstances being what they are with the ocean. You know, it's kind of a combination of their forces in order to kind of put an end to sort of this massacre, essentially, because if the Fire Nation were allowed to continue, they would have wiped out pretty much the entire Northern Water Tribe. I honestly believe that the sheer force and the sheer number of them would have meant that, you know, there would have been no more Northern Water Tribe, and maybe by the end of this episode we would have seen them dwindle down to the numbers that we see in the Southern Water Tribe. You know, so I think it was necessary for what the story needed at this point.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering also, Danya, in the same effect, why the Southern Water Tribe has been allowed to sustain itself as it has, because it's not like anyone's left to protect them. The waterbenders are all but wiped out there. Is it so that they can stick around and be the master slave race in the end? Like, the Fire Nation's ultimate goal is to have, you know, all benders wiped out so that only the firebenders are allowed to control just the non-benders? Or, I mean, it's weird. It's like, I don't get their ultimate goal. Is it just to wipe out the benders, or is it to wipe out every other culture but the Fire Nation, you know?
Well, it starts having connotations of, I guess, almost Nazi Germany and ethnic cleansing kind of thing. So it's kind of got a parallel with that. I mean, you could kind of just as equally see what was happening there as being as senseless and very, very difficult to kind of align yourself with how they were trying to make an ideal race of people. Like, you know, you've got that kind of parallel there. If that is necessarily the way that they were going, you know, we've seen that. We've seen that happen. People have lived through that. So it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility. And it doesn't exactly need a justification. It's just sometimes people, that's kind of what they want to happen. They have this ideal in their head of what they want the world to be. And they get everyone on their side and they just push forward with it. And, you know, it doesn't always have to have rhyme or reason. Oh, wow, I brought that tone down so far.
Well, this episode does that because it is a genocide that's going on, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard not to draw that parallel with the way that it potentially could have gone and what it could have meant for basically the world of Avatar The Last Airbender if they lost all of the waterbenders in this episode.
It's funny, too, because I know, for instance, that it's pretty well known that J.K. Rowling does tie a lot of Harry Potter into, you know, not just only Nazi Germany, but of real-life tyrants and what they did and how they did it. And it makes me wonder, then, if the creators, Bryke, as they're dubbed by fandom, have the same kind of influences in their creative process toward making characters like Lord Ozai.
Yeah, well, it could very well be that that's the way that they were going with it. I mean, it's quite easy to draw that parallel. So I don't know that they've done any interviews where they talk about that. I don't know that anyone's ever asked them if it was intentional, but definitely on a subtext level, you could draw that conclusion, and it would be quite a valid conclusion in its own way, because, you know, as they say, those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. So having something, even if it's not explicit, put through our media to remind us of the kind of thing that could happen if we followed this path again, you know, it's a very important message to keep reminding us of what happened in our own, like, it's recent history. So
And especially in children's media, as you could argue, you know, Avatar and Potter are and aren't. But media consumed by children, it's important to have these real world examples of, like, this is what happens when the world falls to shit. And, you know, it's not always pretty. So I'm sorry if you're looking for the cookie cutter show, but this is not that.
And then you also get not everyone makes it through. There are massive losses of life and young life as well. I mean, we see it with Yue sacrificing herself to kind of save everyone because the whole world is out of balance because of the moon spirit being killed by Zhao. And, you know, in order to bring the world back into balance, she sacrifices herself. So, you know, there's war will always end up with senseless young death all the time. And they don't explicitly ever kind of really say that people are dead. They kind of make it look more like she's passing into the spirit world, or she's become a spirit, the moon spirit herself. So they kind of get around that a little bit. I mean, it is a Nickelodeon show still, so they get as close to explicitly saying this is death as they can for Nickelodeon. So,
well, this episode is pretty heavy. I'm surprised it got through with its Y7 rating, from the fact that Yue does die, the fish is very brutally murdered, if you can count that death, and Zhao is drowned. He is pulled into the water, and, like, you see little bubbles coming up. Yeah. You know, he's done, and the it maybe spread out.
Or is he?
Oh god! I mean, maybe spread out. Those wouldn't feel as extreme, but altogether, they don't feel Y7 to me whatsoever. They definitely feel more TV-14.
I just love Yue.
I really love her as well. Like, I always thought, even when I first saw this series, I really liked her as a character. And, yeah.
She's so brave, you know? Like, she has that moment where, like, she realizes what she has to do and what her life has been, like, leading up to. And it's really sad, but it's really, you know, I don't know, very brave. And I love that detail, like, everything is in black and white at this point, and just her eyes are glowing blue, and it's, yeah, really cool.
Yeah, because she's the moon inside. Oh, and the eyes are the window to the soul. I caught that, too. That was very beautiful. And I loved, as I mentioned in this little show note, that the firebending specifically, not wonderbending, but the firebending, because they couldn't wonderbend, was still glowing, you know? And it was, to me, almost like, you know, how firebending is coming from the soul, as all bending does. So it makes sense that the souls would still be shown, because the moon spirit in Yue's soul is still showing, so any bit of soul that can get out, any spirit would still show in color in this world, perhaps. But it's a pretty terrifying world, where I don't know if it'd always be black and white, if that's just during night, or, you know, when the sun's up, it's all right. But I don't really know what killing that spirit would have done in the long run, and I'm sure it wouldn't have been a pretty world. So thank you, Yue. You're much appreciated.
Also pretty.
Yeah.
It brought us out of our genocide funk.
Well, yeah. Hang on. Speaking of Aang as Koizilla, though, you guys realize that Aang, like, says how this episode is going to end in the episode before, right? When he's like, maybe the spirits will come and mount a giant fish spirit attack. And it's like, huh. That happens.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, they will. Think of how... Oh, I'm so stuck on... This is bad. We're so stuck on genocide. Think of how many Fire Nation peoples are also murdered in this fight that Aang drowns. That's a lot of people. How many people does the Fire Nation still have after all the times that Aang has just decimated their population? It's almost to the certain extent where it's like, you know, the war is taking such a harsh toll on both sides that how are there even still benders at all? It's amazing that after 100 years... You know, that there's still as many out there as there are to me.
Well, you start thinking about, they've obviously conquered other places before. Like, if they have taken people in, or they have taken over particular areas, would they have taken people from there in the army? Like, kind of, you fight for us and you fight for the Fire Nation or, like, we'll kill your family kind of thing. So holding their families hostage in, like, because we've seen that the Fire Nation have taken over, like, Earth Kingdom villages, and we've seen that, you know, they've taken over. It's entirely plausible that they could be folding those people into their army and kind of making them fight on their side while holding their kind of families to ransom. I don't think the Fire Nation, as they've been set up, particularly the kind of Zhao's and the Fire Lord Ozai's of this world, wouldn't be above that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note, too, that the show does represent as Firebenders being almost all of the bad guys. There are some Earthbenders, kind of, and that's it. And that's so far what we've seen. And I think it's going to be interesting to see just the world evolve to where you're talking, Danya, where, like, the world's not so black and white, and just because you're a certain type of bender doesn't mean that you have to have that association with yourself. And it's really funny to me how closed-minded the show seems to start off, but once it starts exploring more, you can see, like, for instance, Master Paku's you know, a really closed-minded individual who's not going to teach someone to waterbend when they need to for the world's sake and stuff. Like, there is more to the world than just firebenders are bad and everyone else is the sufferer.
Yeah. Oh, we brought the tone down again.
And was it Paul? I think you had a point too. I'm sorry, interrupted.
Oh, just that. I mean, I don't really think that the Fire Nation intends to just, like, kill everybody. I think that, you know, they want to subjugate everybody, but that doesn't, you know, and they'll kill a lot of people to do it. But I don't think, like, everybody would have been dead. You know,
I think they probably would have done it to other benders to kind of, I guess, curtail the kind of power that they could have for an uprising. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that would be the way that they'd be going. But anyone who's born without any kind of bending ability, I think they'd probably let them be. But could you imagine how terrible it would be? Because obviously, you don't necessarily have to be a bender to have the potential to have a bender as a child, I don't think. So obviously the way that it passes down the line, there has to be some kind of bender in that lineage somewhere, but it could even come out at a later part. But it would be terrible to think that if after they've wiped out all of the other benders, they then kind of would test for, like, young children if they were born back into, like waterbending tribes or from people who were left, and kind of wiping those people out as they're born. That would be terrifying.
I think it's safe to say that a lot of what would have gone on if they had, in the very least, as we were saying, taken out the moon would have been terrifying, because the only force against them at that point is the gang and some earthbenders, maybe, if they can be convinced to go against them, because the Water Nation is one of the biggest allies that the gang has right now. And as small as the last real waterbending water tribe is, it's going to fight and be hell-bent against trying to protect what's left in the world. So it's really cool that there are people like Iroh out there who are just like, you know, they're over this class division and everything going on with who's what bender from what nation. Basically, you know, Iroh is a big savior in this series. He does a good job of keeping everyone in check, and this show is almost, to me, like a love letter to Iroh, just to show us how awesome you can be in a time of war if you just stop caring and start loving, I guess. So here, that's a little bit cheerier than genocide, eh?
Yeah. And the potential future of what it would have looked like under the Fire Nation.
I know.
Horrible, horrifying thoughts. So the end of this kind of episode, we get a really nice, I think, showdown between Zhao and Zuko, and it kind of ties up that kind of whole plot line of they're banging heads against each other through the entire season. I think it ties it up really, really nicely and kind of gives some kind of closure to it as well, because we learned that Zhao knew that Zuko was the Blue Spirit the whole time, but didn't really bring it out or use it against him until this particular moment. I mean, Brittany, especially, did you find that quite surprising that Zhao was aware that Zuko was the Blue Spirit?
Well, I thought he brought it up in another episode, and that's when I thought he knew, because he was saying it was something, I forget when it was, I could just be making this up in my head, too. They were, like, in a meeting, or maybe it was just with Iroh, but he was saying something about, like, oh, in that blue... Oh, it was when he saw the swords in the room.
Oh, yeah. I completely...
That's when I thought that he knew, so it wasn't, like, a huge surprise. But, yeah, I think it was interesting that he chose, like, I mean, I think he kind of knew that this was his final moment to use that against him.
Yeah. You think Zuko would have smartened up and not have kept those swords on display like that? That really wasn't smart. It's not like even hiding it in plain sight. That's more of asking for trouble, if you ask me.
Just shove it under the bed with everything else you need to hide.
For real. Like, under the mattress would have worked just great.
Well, I don't know. Under the mattress, putting a sharp, pointy object underneath the thing that you're sleeping on, probably not the smartest idea. Putting it under the bed completely... fine, yeah. I do not recommend storing swords underneath your mattress. That's a PSA.
I always do have a slight wondering about those swords. Like, are they from some special fighter in the past? Like, where did Zuko? He said where he inherited them, which I can't remember, but it didn't answer my question of, like, a real good backstory of what they were about. Because they're really apparently sharp and durable to be able to take all of those extreme arrow blows and stuff. And it's really fun seeing him use them. I love Zuko with swords. It's so unique in this world to see someone using swords like he does. It's like, you know, everyone has bending, so why bother using a physical weapon unless you're a non-bender, like, you know, Sokka's boomerang. But it's just kind of a unique way to hide his bending when he needs to, and I think that is it goes to show how multi-talented Zuko is in all types of fighting martial arts. As he says, he's had to fight his whole life, and he wouldn't take that back because that's made him stronger. And I can't get enough of either Zuko or Iroh. And it's just so funny how the villains are usually our favorite people on TV shows, because they just have such intensity, and it's fun. It's really fun to get past their ugly exterior, as you may.
I mean, and we have a parallel then, right at the end, back to sort of the start of the episode, where Aang saves Zuko and doesn't leave him to, like, freeze to death. But then Zuko tries to save Zhao at the end as well. Like, you have that parallel of their kind of attitudes towards people. And despite all wrongdoings and what they may have done against them, they still, in the end, try to save them. Or don't want to be directly responsible, I guess, for their death. I mean, it was kind of a... like, I don't know if Zuko thought that maybe somewhere in his deep, dark, blackened soul that Zhao may or may not be redeemable. But I don't know. It's kind of... It was an interesting parallel from the start of the episode to the end of the episode, I think. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's really odd that he tried to save Zhao. I can't see what he was seeing in him. I don't know what was left to redeem of his humanity after he was perfectly content with watching the world burn, quite literally. You know, he just doesn't have a moral compass that you need to be redeemable. I believe, a sociopath for all intents and purposes. He doesn't seem to love or care. He just wants power. And it's sick, and it's I feel like I'm leading toward a capital punishment conversation, which we shouldn't have, because that's usually a little bit more heated. So, I don't know if I wish he would have died or not, but I just don't know if I would have saved him. I know I wouldn't have saved him. I'll give you that much.
But I think the parallel it draws between who Aang is as a person and who Zuko potentially is underneath the surface of what the gang know him as, I think that was very, very interesting for kind of showing another side to him. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the have you guys seen Star Trek, the reboot, the first movie? Have either?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen the second one. Phenomenal. I haven't even checked out the first.
Oh, but there's a bit when they're on the bridge and Kirk is like, "I'm gonna give you an opportunity to surrender," and kind of throw yourselves at our mercy. And Spock's like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, I thought you'd want me to show mercy." And then he's like, "In this case, no. They wiped out my planet," kind of thing. So, yeah, it kind of reminded me a little bit of that. It's like, "Oh, Zuko, you're trying, but no."
I mean, I think this is where the kids show thing comes in. Like, good characters, to a certain extent, don't kill other characters and don't sit by while other characters are being killed, whether or not that character is good or bad. And I think that's just kind of the way it goes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, guys, if Rewatchable was a drinking game and every time a Harry Potter reference came, you'd have to take a shot, they'd be very drunk by now. But Harry saved Draco, okay? Draco was trying to straight up kill him.
Once Harry again, doesn't even kill Voldemort, so...
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like Zuko and Harry have a really, really like reference there. Because, you know, they're fighting against their mortal enemy. And then when their mortal enemy has the upper hand, suddenly another outside elemental force comes in to stop the mortal enemy. And the hero tries to save the enemy and stuff. So, yeah, once again, you guys would be pretty drunk right now if it was for all those Harry Potter references being in a drinking game. I'll give you that much.
And let's move on to our closing moments that made everyone kind of go the first time they saw it, is that Zuko has a sister and she's looking super badass. Brittany, what was your thoughts on seeing Zuko's sister for the first time?
That this is the Easter egg.
That I found many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
Many moons ago. Good reference.
Yes. Non-intentional.
Many UAs ago.
Yeah, many UAs ago, I saw this girl in focus in front of Iroh and knew she'd come back. And here she is. Yeah. And she is a badass. She's really cool.
You've only seen her for 2 seconds.
I know, but I want more. Because I know she's going to be kind of important, and I want more, and I want to start watching season 2 now.
But Brittany, my dear newbie, have you noticed what else she is?
No.
Oh, this is probably a place where we could point this out, but think back to the opening credits.
The opening credits.
Yeah, every single episode we have that opening bit.
Is she the firebender?
Da da da!
At least we led her to the conclusion.
Your nose the entire time, newbies. She's been there through the whole of season 1. She every single episode. Yeah, that when I saw her at the end of this episode, I was like. Not only because, oh my god, Zuko's sister, and kind of thing. I was like, oh my god, it's the girl from the opening credits.
And I love that she's simply Zuko's sister. And I like that she doesn't have a name right now, too, because that's really fun. I like just having a nameless evil character looming. It's just so cool to me. Avatar did that so well in the end. It is beyond epic.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I as much as we shun upon the M. Night Shyamalan movie, there was the same ending in the movie where, you know, Azula. It's okay. Hey. It's not a spoiler. It's kind of just a thing. Regardless, she's shown in the end. The actress looks really cool too. They did a really good job of casting her, I thought.
And get a sequel to that movie. They were never going to get a sequel to that movie ever. There was just no. And also Bad Mitch, I'm like rolling up a newspaper and smack you on the nose, you naughty, naughty boy.
There's no taking that back from Brittany's ears. Poor girl. Full name Brittany.
So what were our favorite lines and scenes?
Yeah, I know.
Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Mitch. Goodness me.
Oh, no. But wait, I still want to know what Brittany's general predictions for the future are. What you think is going to happen. I mean, Zuko sister aside, like, I don't know, even like evil plot wise, now that Zhao's done.
Well, I still, I mean, I made this prediction for the finale and it didn't really happen too much, but I want to see Zuko with the gang a little bit more. Like, I want them to be friends and hang out and have a good time, but also try to kill each other.
See if we, yeah.
just for a little bit more, you know.
Okay.
That's what I want right now. And for his sister, him to have, like, an epic battle.
Well, do you want it to be a hidden moment, like a blue spirit moment, or do you want it to be a straight-up moment?
No, like a straight-up moment.
Oh, wow. Quite the tall order.
Yeah. Guess we'll see what you get when we go into season two.
Yes, we will.
And I think I'm going to take a break from the podcast because I just want to binge watch like 8 episodes in a row. I've been on every week for like 5 weeks and I only get to watch 2 episodes at a time. And I just want a time where I can watch so many episodes.
It's really nice being able to just watch a load in a row if you haven't been on for a week. So instead of like watching 2 in a week, you finish your week off by watching 4. And it's really nice if you've got the time, obviously. But now that obviously fall shows are back, it's not so much the easy to watch so many shows in a row.
No, I'm really going to go watch the next 2 episodes of season 2 as soon as we're done. I can't wait. And I forget what happens in them always. So it's just great to be able to like revisit them and just like get blasted in the face with big plot moments. Like, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. So, yeah, favorite scenes. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Favorite scenes. Mitch, you are the first person up for favorite scenes.
Right on. Well, I suppose that's ironic because we're at the doc. I should have been the person who decided, right? my favorite moment is Hey Bai's Super Saiyan Godzilla shout at the monkey. Always love when those happen.
Michal, what was your favorite scene?
Definitely Aang and Co, because that scene, I mean, I don't even know how many times I've seen it, and it does not get any less cool. It's just creeptastic and amazing.
Yeah, that was the one that I wanted, but by the time I got it, it's stolen it. No. But mine is just like a silly little moment to take away from the heaviness of this episode is Momo jumping on Zhao's head. It's when he kind of like attacks him, and Zhao's like, no, get this thing off me.
I get scared. That was really funny.
Yeah,
I get scared for Momo that he's gonna get hurt in that little scene right there. Every time I see it,
no, Momo.
So like he's gonna fire blast his face. Ah.
Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Zhao is explaining how he's going to have control over the moon, and Han just comes running out of the back like, "I got you, General Choi," I think he says, and he just pushes him overboard, and it's just like. As I was saying,
yeah, it's kind of like, Han, really? You thought you weren't gonna, you'd like running at him screaming, what are you thinking? That's not an assassination attempt, that's stupidity.
And wasn't he still wearing the old costume too?
Yeah. Yeah. How they even got that far onto the ship is really.
I don't know. I don't. Just incompetency abounds.
Right. Talk to Zuko. He seemed to have good access to the costumes somehow. I don't know where he found that one, but
On the ship.
Yeah. Oh, I do have one continuity plot point that I'm very curious about. Does anyone remember where Zuko goes once he's brought back to the Northern Water Tribe to fight Zhao? Because I don't remember from where he passed out in the tundra to where he's fighting Zhao, where he goes. He's just like, he isn't there with the gang when they're about to see, you know, the moon spirit being killed, right? Like, they just toss him off the side and say, wish the best, and then that's it.
Bye, good luck.
Because the next time you see him, he's just kind of, like, hanging out, and Zhao attacks him, and I'm like, what? I don't know. Big plot hole there, I suppose, but I'll pretend I didn't notice it.
It's like, it happened off screen, or whatever, but no, I don't think we see, like, how he gets from point A to point B.
Right? Yeah. And convenient. I'm like, huh.
Not that I remember anyway, but if anyone who's listening can remember and does know how to fill that little continuity issue, drop us a comment and tell us, hey, you guys just weren't paying attention. This is what happened. But yeah, favorite lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bitch, let's go.
Mine's the epic line that Iroh has against Zhao when Aang's like, the world's gonna end if you do that. And Iroh's just like, screw it. Whatever you do to that spirit, I'll unleash on you tenfold. Oh.
And you know he can do it.
And he does.
Yeah.
He like scares everyone away.
Yeah.
What's his nickname? Isn't it like the something dragon?
Dragon of the West.
Dragon of the West. Yeah, it sounds very intimidating.
Mikal?
Mine is Zuko's little monologue to Aang in the cave where he says, you know, like, you're like my sister. My father says she was born lucky. He says I was lucky to be born. And I think that line just tells you so much about Zuko. Obviously, we've had a whole season to learn about Zuko, but that, like, kind of crystallizes his experiences and why he approaches things in the way he does in a really beautiful way.
My one actually follows on from yours because it's just such a beautiful thing, and I just needed to get the whole thing in there because it's so perfect. Because, you know, that highlights so much about what his family life was like, and then he kind of goes on to be like, I don't need luck, though. I don't want it. I've always had to struggle and fight, and that's made me strong. It's made me who I am. And that's just Zuko to a T. And it's just, it's beautiful. I love Zuko as a character so, so, so much. So yeah, that whole little bit sums up Zuko's entire character. Sometimes even better. Like, it's exactly what we've seen through season one summed up in one tiny little kind of sentence, really. And it's just, it's great. Zuko feels. And I guess we'll close out with Brittany's line.
Yeah, so I was really creeped out by, you know, Kyle, but I loved when he delivered the line about the yin and yang, and he says, Tui and La, your moon and ocean, have always circled each other in an eternal dance. They balance each other, push and pull, life and death, good and evil, yin and yang. And I just thought, finally, because his face was hidden, first of all, but it just was, I don't know what made me really focus on that line. Like, I kept going back and listening to it again and again during that scene because I wanted to write it down, and then I remembered we could just copy and paste it. I was like, oh, but I kept going back because I wanted to get it right, and then I just copied it anyway. There was something about it, because I think it was like he was so creepy but delivered like this beautiful message, and it really helped Aang. So I liked that line.
Brittany, yeah, I actually have a question for you. Do you think Ko is going to come back?
I hope so. As creepy as he is, it's such a force that I hope comes back.
Cool.
He does promise that he does see him in the future. You just seem to have
Mitch, some. You should stop talking when I make that.
Mitch, no. So we're going to move into some listener feedback, which spoils like the rest of the entirety of Avatar The Last Airbender.
He tells me to go on Nicktoons to look at something from season two, and I'm like, ah!
It's horrible. They have, like, way too much as, like, their promotional art for the show.
Oh, it's so bad.
I feel very bad for you. I really do.
Yeah, I can't go back on Nicktoons anymore, because I'm like, oh, wait, no, stop.
I mean, it's probably a good thing that you don't go back there in the first place.
Yeah, so we're going to move into some listener feedback. So again, if you want to get in touch with us and have your feedback on the show, we obviously pick out some of the coolest ones, the ones that we can chat about. But you can either email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can chat to us on Twitter. on @Ari_watchable, or you can leave us a comment on this post, the show notes, as they go up on hypeable.com. And you can also leave us iTunes reviews. And apparently, this week, if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, we won't turn your beloved into the moon. So that's always great incentive for leaving us a review. But yeah, we've got quite a lot of listener feedback this time around. So from Twitter, we've got Joe Ludwigson, who agrees with us about Iroh and says, "Oh, Iroh, the best uncle and surrogate father a boy could ask for. #feels.
Indeed.
Yeah. I don't know how to say that. Is it Peggy Rui?
Peggy Rui. Well, it's probably best that I take this one because I'm assuming you wouldn't know, Janya, what Flamia meant in reference to Rewatchable quite yet, would you?
No, I don't think so.
It was our bleeping out curse word for the last episode that we had.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I was referencing because Peggy listens to the show with her daughter. And I was like, we can't swear if we have like an 8-year-old listening. And then, yeah, well, she wrote this in. So here, I'll let you get that then.
Yeah, it's like, it says, thanks, Mitch, but the cursing doesn't bother us. If you're ever really curious about what a child thinks of Avatar The Last Airbender, just ask. And we got, are these the people who sent us the little video?
Right.
Oh my God, that's the best. Can I just say that video? I've had a really hard day at work. That video made my day because it was the first thing I saw when I got back from work. And it was fantastic. I love it. So,
thanks, Peggy.
Yeah, thank
you. Well, we should say what it was. It was cute. It was a video of Peggy's daughter watching the part where Zuko is swimming around with, like, those lion turtles and then fighting Katara and stuff. So it was sweet because she wrote that her daughter can understand the more adult themes, but, you know, kind of laughs along with the childish things still, too. So, yeah, that was very sweet of you to email it into us, and thank you for doing that, Peggy.
Yeah. And we've also got a nice little photo there from Catherine. This is terrible. I can't. Vadamian, maybe? I don't know if that's how you say your surname, and I'm really, really sorry if it's not. And she put, "I don't think you guys will be able to guess my drawing," and has a little picture from Draw Something. And that's totally the Avatar. That's totally, it's like a little stick figure with like a blue blob, a little red blob, a black blob, and some like squiggly lines. It's totally the Avatar. I'd get that. I would totally get that if someone sent me that on Draw Something.
And you can pretty much see the word Avatar in those letters at the bottom.
Yeah, it's not, it's clearly the Avatar. We'll tweet it.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. We'll have to do that.
After this episode goes up, I'll tweet it.
Yeah. We have a hypeable comment here from Luck, who says, "Hey, great podcast you guys have. I watched Avatar The Last Airbender plenty of times and The Legend of Korra too. I like how you seem to have found a way not to spoil a lot for the newbies." Well, until this episode anyway.
Oh, yeah, man.
It is really hard to do, I can imagine. "I do have a question for the newbies next week," which should be this week, "about which characters are you expecting to reappear in the show, besides obviously the main characters? What about Zhang Zhang, Paku, the fortune teller, the mechanist, Bato, and any other characters you can think of? Greetings from Holland. Keep up the good work."
Holland.
So that's, yeah, we're going to throw that one straight to Brittany.
Oh, this is, all right. Well, I in my heart hold Bumi very close, so I hope Bumi just has like a whole season dedicated to him. That would be my ultimate goal for Avatar. just Bumi and maybe the Cabbage Guy.
Yes, Cabbage Guy.
Bumi and Cabbage Guy, good picks. Those are fun characters.
In my head, I was just thinking, please say Cabbage Guy. Just say Cabbage Guy. Please say Cabbage Guy. I love Cabbage Guy so much.
Yeah, I think what I said earlier, too, I would like Kyle to come back, because I think that's such an interesting character. And maybe some more, I don't know if this would count toward reoccurring, but
just some more avatars from the past.
Like Roku?
Well, yeah, but more than Roku, because I like Roku.
Oh, so further back in the
further cycle? Back.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. That would be really cool.
Or maybe even that one avatar that we liked so much that was stolen by, the face was stolen by Ko.
Yes.
As we were talking before, that fits here.
Mm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But that is it. That's season one, guys. We've made it through one season.
In zero movies.
In zero. Mitch!
It's fine. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Yes. So that's it. I guess we'll say goodbye and see you in season two, guys. I'm Danya.
I'm Michal.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye. Bye, guys. See you in season two.
Earth Flower.